Lewis Scottish Prism, the programme that is unapologetically pro-Scottish independence and anti-Westminster rule. Everything we say here is viewed through a Scottish prism. Brought to you by Barhead Boy.
And welcome back, folks, to Through a Scottish Prism. Lovely to have you back. Hope you and yours are all well. And if you're waiting for your blue envelope, I hope it comes soon. If you've had your blue envelope, I hope you've had your injection, you're staying safe. Remember, stay at social distance, only go out when you have to, all the rules. Sooner we beat this horrible virus, the better. But today, I'm joined by one of our new ALBA candidates, and it's Eva Comrie, who was born in the heart of Stirling, in the heart of Scotland rather than Stirling, and brought up in Blair Growrie, Crieff and ALBA, and was educated with the help of a student grant at Edinburgh University, where she studied law. She's got her own practice and specialises in family and child law, and she is the bionic candidate, let me tell you, because the Scottish National Health Service, as she said herself, has saved her life and gave her a couple of dozen false legs and built me a titanium spine. So if you ever see a lady in Stirling with 12 legs and a titanium spine, you'll know who it is. So she's now, as I say, joined the ALBA party, or ALAPA, if we want to use its proper pronunciation. And it's a great pleasure for me to welcome Eva Comrie to Through a Scottish Prism. Eva, hello, how are you?
Hello there, Roddy. It's nice to be here. Thank you. It's been such a lovely day and a great day for the candidate launch event. I think you were there.
I was indeed.
Enjoy yourself.
Oh, I always enjoy myself, especially when I'm in the company of greatness. And I look upon all of these candidates as great. I mean, it's quite a list. We'll come on to that. But yeah, this time last week, of course, you were still in the SNP.
That's right. At that point in time, I was the number one list candidate for the same region as I am now for ALBA, which is obviously Mid-Scotland and Fife.
Yeah.
But as they say, you've heard it before here, a week's an awful long time.
Indeed.
Following morning that I left the SNP, joined the ALBA party and was there for Alex Salmond's launch. I know there's a lot of people very unhappy with me because I've decided to do that. Mm. Others appear to be delighted, to put it mildly. But I think, I hope, the penny's slowly beginning to drop with the sceptics that this supermajority idea isn't a game. It's a tactic, it's a perfectly legal and lawful tactic, and it's designed simply to accelerate, or as I said earlier today at the launch, expedite Scotland's independence. Mm-hmm. I feel really pretty strongly about the speed that we need to go at now, because I don't think that we've got any time to waste, and I'm far from alone in that view. I think it's one you share yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mentioned to Alec today about the two big dangers I see, which are the internal market bill and the fallout economically and socially and everything else of Brexit. And I think we need to protect ourselves and inside the British Union, I don't see us being very well protected.
Well, I have to say to you, I think, you know, you mentioned already that I have the greatest of respect for the Scottish NHS for reasons already stated. I've been in and out of hospital since I was 7 years old. Had various ops and eventually lost a leg in 2013. Between then and now, the destruction of the NHS has happened really only since the Tories were in control and started clamping down a bit more on budgets, but especially in relation to Brexit. Some of the items for my false leg have to come from Europe. So I was at hospital yesterday at Westmark in Glasgow. Fantastic setup, really great staff. Major efforts done by everybody there to equip everybody with what they need. However, I need a what's called a thigh sleeve. Sometimes you need a new foot. You might need bits and pieces for individual parts of the legs. And those that come from Europe used to be a following day, next day delivery. They're now a minimum of 4 weeks delivery. And some of those deliveries have gone missing and had to be replicated several times. So you can see just even in that one comparatively small aspect of the NHS that all of a sudden, literally overnight, there are massive implications in terms of service provision, service delivery, and lots of folk who quite literally will suffer trying to keep their health tip-top and might not even be able to walk if the bits that they need for their legs don't arrive from the continent in time. Can you actually believe that we're saying that in 2021?
No, it reminds me, actually, I remember watching that film as a kid with Kenneth Moore as he reached for the skies or something, where he played Douglas Bader, and they had to, the Royal Air Force had to fly from the UK to Germany to parachute in legs.
That's right.
We're getting back, that we're talking 1942 or something, but as you say, it's 2021, and that's Brexit, and we know that the effect this is having on our food and alcohol business, as well as numerous others. And the other big one, of course, is talking to the NHS, is that all our a good percentage of our vaccines of the AstraZeneca are made in the Netherlands and brought in, and that too has implications.
Major implications. I've thankfully had my first one. I got it last week, and I think it's going to be about another 9 weeks before I get the next one, and hopefully it'll be available. The fact that we're not able to import them directly to Scotland and we've got to go through Westminster arrangements is another really galling aspect to this entire dependency thing that we've still got going here. After all these years of electing folk with mandates to deliver independence referenda and promise after promise, we're still stuck twiddling our thumbs. Hmm. So, you know, from my perspective, we really can't wait. We've watched what's happened in the pandemic. We're watching the effects of Brexit unfold. We're waiting to see just what the deficiencies in our market and our supplies are going to be. And it's really a nightmare that's lying ahead in front of us. You wouldn't need to be Mystic Meg to see what's coming.
No, it doesn't look good. But if I could just say, I mean, as a lawyer with your own practice, you know, you didn't need to do this. What sort of drove you to leave, you know, I mean, I don't mean a cushy life, easy, but I mean, it was an easier life than putting yourself up for the ridicule of the public and the voting. What drove you to do that?
In the first instance, the reason why I sought to be a candidate with SNP was to try to deliver a mandate for independence yet again. However, when I looked at the detail of the voting system, bearing in mind that I'm in mid-Scotland and Fife, it was abundantly clear that if all the SNP candidates in the constituencies held their seats, I was not going to get elected off the list, even though I was number one on the list. So that I was a bit unhappy about, and then analysed the rest of the constituencies and regions and came to the conclusion that the SNP by itself cannot possibly attain the supermajority. If it could have, I might have stayed there. I think it's pretty clear in earlier years that the SNP was happy to suggest to others that you could vote appropriately on the constituency for SNP, but your list vote could go perhaps to the Greens, because that way there might be some sort of coalition agreed on an independence strategy. But my own view now, bearing in mind the analysis that were undertaken on behalf of ALBA before the party was launched, the right way to get a guaranteed supermajority is pretty clear. SNP 1 in the constituency and ALBA 2 on the list. And what you'll do there is, ideally, you want SNP to win every single first-past-the-post seat and back that up with the maximum number of list seats for ALBA, and then you've got two parties with one common goal, one common principal goal, being independence. Mm-hmm. You don't then have to rely on mixing and matching with the Greens here and there, or an independent maybe up in Highland or whatever. You can go for it with a teamwork, really, from two parties who are comprised predominantly of folk whose priority is supposed to be, in the case of the SNP, and certainly is in the case of ALBA, Scottish independence, the quicker the better. And use the supermajority as major leverage, because it's an indication, a very strong indication, that Scotland's people intend to establish their own sovereignty and won't be argued and won't be stalled and won't be fobbed off any longer.
Oh, and as you can see, I mean, it's already the unionists with three parties dominate the list seats just now. And one of the tactics people say, oh, what about 2011? 2011 was a fluke. Our vote went up by 500,000. See, I still say we. I'm still saying we for SNP. I can't help it. It's habits of a lifetime. But the SNP vote went up by 500,000. But we lost our majority, 5 years later in 2016, because the vagaries of a system that was put in place that no single party could, without a great deal of luck, fluke, whatever, could ever govern. And again, here where I live in Catalonia, there's three main parties in the Parliament who work together for the cause of independence. And it should be the same for us. If the unions have got three, and if you watch them at First Minister's Questions, they all ask the same topic. They all gang up together as one. And so why shouldn't we use it for our side as well now? Use it to our advantage and to Scotland's advantage.
Well, that's exactly the point. And I think that the fear on the part of the unionists has been terribly evident in the course of the last 6 days, because there's been news item after news item and multiple press reports to do with ALBA and that Alex Salmond and his or manipulate the system. But they don't call it gaming or manipulate the system when it's the unionists that are ganging up on the nationalists. They don't call it gaming or manipulation when it's SNP 1, Green 2. No. So to be any different. The difference is that the unionists fear Alex Salmond, the power that he's got and his ability as a strategist, as a tactician, as a leader who has surrounded himself, if I may say so, with a lot of capable candidates, predominantly women, but highly representative of the face of Scotland. You know, with, as I've said, with more women than men, we have disabled, we have business people, we have current elected politicians, with people who have previously been elected, we've got folk of all ages from all different sorts of backgrounds. And I think that Alex's team, of which I'm very, very proud to be part, actually reflects pretty well a good balance of the makeup of Scotland. And I think that that's the bit that the unionists fear the most. They fear seeing the SNP and ALBA collaborate, join together and fire ahead with a common purpose. And that's why we're getting the flak.
Absolutely. The fact is, it'll be easy enough to say no, Boris, to everything that's put in front of them. It'd be harder if there's a parliament with 80, 90 pro-independence people in it and a small rump of unionists. It's harder for even Westminster and even Boris the buffoon to refuse the will of the Scottish people at that point. And that's what we've got to strive towards. But you're right. I mean, the Green Party, for example, are putting up 10 candidates, I believe, in the constituencies. And that could split the independence vote, whereas the ALBA party is no threat to the SNP whatsoever. And that's something that we've got to get across. But how do we get that across in this short window between now and May the 5th?
Well, what we are saying in ALBA is that we positively encourage people to give their first vote, their constituency vote, to the SNP. You know, my MSP is Keith Brown. I hold him in very high regard. I will be voting for him. There is no doubt about that. And I'll be telling all my friends and neighbours to be voting for the SNP too in their first vote. No doubt. The SNP has to sweep the boards on the constituency. They must do that. They should put absolutely everything that they've got into those aspects of the election. ALBA will support them 100%. However, for the supermajority to work, the second vote on the list has to go to the ALBA party. Again, across the board, that way we maximise the impact. There's no point in folks saying, I'm not so happy with the SNP now, so I'm not going to bother voting for them in the constituency. I'll just give my list vote to ALBA. That's counterproductive. What's also counterproductive is to vote SNP in the constituency and not to bother voting on the list, or to vote for somebody that's not ALBA, because, again, that reduces the impact. If the desire is to forge ahead towards independence earlier than otherwise, then we need that supermajority, max the yes vote, as you know, others have said long before me, max the yes vote, max the impact, multiple SNP, MSPs elected on the constituency. That's a strong message for a party which is still very strong despite the number of people that have joined ALBA. And off the list, maximum ALBA representatives too, and collectively they'll sweep the boards. And instead of having a government or a political party on its own, either as a minority or a very small majority addressing Boris, who would just swat that away like a fly, what you would then have, provided SNP and ALBA do have the supermajority is that you'll have the power of a parliament behind you, a supermajority in a parliament where those voices cannot be silenced. That's what I said the other day. That would be a Hampden roar. It wouldn't be the wee trickle when the ball just skiffs the bar, you know. It's right in the back of the net and the crowd are screaming because Boris knows what he's facing.
Yeah, the most important thing I always like about Alec and his campaigns, the way he's doing, and this is no different, is he is determined to have a positive campaign. You know, as he always did, the hope over fear. And but that's going to be difficult when we're faced with, one, the British media. And at the moment, there's still a lot of people within the SNP who are still being resistant to this. Maybe they're scared about losing their exclusivity. I don't know. But they need to come on board. This is a two-way street. We have to help each other. We're helping Scotland at the same time.
Well, you know, the principal aim of the SNP is the same as the principal aim for the Albert Party, and that's Scottish independence, and to promote and secure all Scottish interests. But we both parties want to live in a democracy, and voting SNP 1 and Alba 2 is entirely democratic, and it's fair, and it would give representative results. We don't have to sit back and wait for permissions and go with begging bowls to Westminster, but I understand completely that some people will be hurt, they'll be let down, they'll be angry. I know from the messages I've had that some people were absolutely blue, blazing, raging that I had done what I did. But I would do it all again, because there are so many people out there that were effectively disenfranchised the last time by voting on the list for the same party that they voted in on the constituencies, and their votes were just not numbered. They didn't count at all. The best part of 1 million votes going a-begging. Mm-hmm. Alba will have their time, thanks very much. And that's how we'll get independence quicker than we will by any other route.
Mm-hmm. If you just take Glasgow, which the numbers I know off the top of my head, there was a list seats in 2016, 111,101 SNP list votes. There was 10 seats, the SNP won all 10. The Labour Party had 59,000 in their heartland, nearly half of what the SNP had, and they get 3 seats.
That's right.
Or 4 seats. The Tories get 2 and the Greens get 1. So all those votes were wasted. And that's what's going to happen again if we don't do it wisely. And I cannot understand why anyone wouldn't want to, if you believe in Scottish independence, this is the way forward. 2 independence parties working hand in hand to bring Scotland's independence. Never mind the personalities or what's happened. This is about Scotland. And let's stop the nonsense, folks, and get moving for Scotland. Is there any sort of particular field that you want to specialise in once you get to Holyrood?
I think what I'm particularly interested in is how we're going to help the people who really are vulnerable. And that's a word that's overused, I think, these days, without being necessarily particularly accurately used. But in Scotland now, I mean, I can speak best in terms of, you know, my home county, Clannanshire. In some parts of the county, child poverty is as high as 40%. The average for the county is around about 19, 20, 22% or so. So obviously some places are better off, some are worse off. But you need to think about what that really means. It means that there are children who are not being fed in the morning before they go to school. So when they go to school, they're relying on getting their breakfast there, which thankfully the SNP is providing for them, but life ought not to be like that. They're getting free school lunches, which again is a good sign, but again, life ought not to be that way. Some of these families are homeless and having to look to the council to accommodate them. Yes, we are building very many more houses than we used to, but the root of this issue to do with poverty and need and want is because we're not in control of our entire budget. So whatever money there is in Scotland to spend on housing or schools or school dinners or clothing grants or, you know, the child payment that the SNP brought in recently or the baby box or any of these innovations, including free prescriptions or, you know, free healthcare or whatever, is all coming from a fixed budget that we get from Westminster, which comprises only a portion of what we pay in. And if we had total control in Scotland, we would be able, of course, as you know, Roddy, to establish our own priorities. And I think in an independent Scotland, a priority would certainly be proper care of the vulnerable, but proper attention being paid to giving people real life chances, so that every child born in Scotland wouldn't just get a baby box, but would be catered for and looked after properly from cradle to grave. And that would involve greater resources in education, outdoor education, the Leslie Riddick style of stuff where you talk about people being able to go out into the country and enjoy the countryside and go hutting and all that kind of thing and go hill climbing, you know, when the pandemic's over, enjoy what a beautiful country we've got, but learn from it and create what, you know, many countries of the world, many peoples of the world would be highly jealous of. But at the moment, anything along those lines that the SNP government tries to do is no much more than a sticking plaster, because we don't have the full control of all of our resources and be able to make all the decisions that are the right ones for us. You know, our share of Trident, for example, is however many billion. I've absolutely no idea off the top of my head how much it is. I just know it's obscene. It's money thrown away for the worst of reasons. We're contributing to runways and airports down south that will have no benefit for us.
HS2.
We were paying for lorry parks in Kent. We're paying for Priti Patel's innovations in the Home Office and a whole load of really nasty, horrible policies, none of which I think sit well at all with the people of Scotland in the main. And, you know, if we kept our own resources and we spent them here on the things that we hold dear, that could be transformational within a very short period of time. It's more than houses and teachers and social workers or, you know, free education. It's about having the ability to hold your head up high and say, well, you know, we're no a basket case. We're no living on handouts. We've created our own wealth our way, and we're spending it on what we want to spend it on in a domestic context and internationally. We're no warmongers. We're no jealous. We're no selfish. We're no trying to run away and hide. We want to trade. We want to travel. We want to participate on a world stage. You know, we're no any better than anybody else, but I'm damn sure we're no any worse.
Say that again. And it is about, the other thing is that, you know, the decisions that are taken, one size fits all. But what I'm sure everyone does know, but just in case you don't know, is that, as you've said, everything that we buy, be it the bridge, the Queen's Ferry Bridge or anything else, it comes out of our budget. Our fixed set budget, and it's not even all our money. There's still money goes down south over and above what we get back. But as you point out, when they build the railway or they build anything, we have to pick up, they borrow money and we have to pay it back, and then they say, oh, you're too poor to do this. I mean, it'd be great if I could get, you know, use my neighbour's credit card and then tell me he's too skint and use it for spending in me. It'd be a great life. We have to take back control, and the only way we're going to do that is with a supermajority, and we take over the control. Because the other thing, Eva, and you're a lady of the law, you'll be able to correct me if I'm wrong, although I appreciate constitutional law is a very specialised subject. But with a supermajority, under the Scotland Act, it's, you need a two-thirds majority, for example, to call a general election. You can't just call it with a simple majority. Am I right? Could I ask you to go a wee bit closer to your microphone, Eva? I'm losing you a wee bit.
I think the idea of the supermajority principally is that it's almost impossible for Boris to ignore that, because it's such a huge symbol, if you like. It's not just down to party politics. It's down to almost an entire nation roaring with one voice, I suppose, is how I would put it. Constitutionally, there's an argument that says, yes, with a two-thirds majority, you can call an election. That, in effect, would become a plebiscite. And I think that's something that's on the cards if there is a supermajority that Boris ignores and we don't have, you know, some sort of discussions heading towards independence and a plebiscite comes up instead. That said, I think what is clear is that steps will need to be taken, probably in some sort of collaborative way, if you like, between the SNP and ALBA. Both need to be realistic, probably prior to as well as following the election, in terms of what their joint destinations are. I know, obviously, that the SNP have said we want to have an independence referendum when the pandemic is over. But I'm one of these who says we can't wait until the pandemic is over because life's too short and time is too short. We need to get cracking ASAP.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in America, what was it, 160 million people went to the polls to elect a new president, and down to mayors and sheriffs in local towns. And if they manage, I don't know, something like 18 countries have had elections. And if we can hold an election in May, then we can hold a referendum whenever. Or I'd call a plebiscite election, was my preference, actually. Because that way, with a plebiscite independence election, the unionists can't boycott it. They wouldn't dare boycott it. They would have to compete against us.
They would have to compete against us, but I think that we currently have the difficulty that they probably are competing against us. They're just not saying so officially. You know, they've made approaches to each other and they've rebuffed each other. But that's just the public face. Behind the scenes, no doubt, Better Together are on the rampage again, albeit that they'll be keeping it quiet. They'll be trying to strike us as often as they can, because the unionists see the force, the very, very positive force of people electing both the SNP and ALBA. It's a great voice for the people.
I mean, the unionists have spotted it. I did a blog this week where I showed things where even David Mundell, who's been silent since December 2019 when he got his seat back and went down to London, he said and done nothing. And suddenly when ALBA appeared last Friday, even Fluffy Mundell saw the writing on the wall and went, this is a danger. Professor Stevenson, the famous history woman, she's going apoplectic. She said, this doesn't split the... This maximises the independence vote. We have to halt it. We have to stop it. Douglas Ross trying to get deals done, as you say, with Better Together again, get the band back together again. They know it's a danger. The biggest concern to me is that a lot of our own side don't understand that. And that's why the SNP really need to start telling their support the truth as we are today. They need to be told, you know, vote one for the SNP. That's all they need to say. They don't even have to say vote ALBA. They just have to say, give us your constituency vote. They don't have to do anything else. Would you agree?
That's right. Well, I agree up to a point, but what they should be saying is they should be directing people's attention to the results in, as you mentioned earlier, 2016. You know, as I said myself, this area here, this region, Mid-Scotland and Fife, if the SNP hold on to all their seats first past the post, they're not going to get any on the list. So from my perspective, there's absolutely nothing to gain from an SNP vote on the list in that region if independence is your aim. And that's the position statistically throughout the country, except possibly for the Highlands and the south of Scotland. But again, you need to have a very close eye on the statistics and on the polls. But the reality is, if you vote SNP 1, ALBA 2, these votes are not competing with each other. They're registered as votes which count and are counted. Vote SNP 1 and SNP 2, one of those votes isn't going to count. That's just the system is.
The Servation poll that was done last Thursday, actually, was the last poll out as far as I've seen. And that showed that the SNP would get zero seats in the list, the regional list. Not one. A single seat, not even in the south and not even in the Highlands. Because they're so far in front and they're all... I mean, let's face it, the SNP have been over 50% now since the Tory got their 80-seat majority. That's what seemed to hit the final trigger for a lot of people in Scotland. When they then knew that Brexit was a definite and that there was an 80-seat Tory majority, they thought, oh, that's it, we've got to get out of here now, and they jumped ship. So the SNP have been running over the last 21, 22 polls over 50%. If you've got over 50% in the constituency, folks, you're not going to win any list seats anywhere. That's just a fact. That's not making it up. Do the arithmetic. The rest is all vested interest.
And you and I know, as do many people out there, and Alex Salmond being at the top of that list, that the unionists have worked that out long ago. That's why the Parliament was set up the way it was set up. That's why we've got the voting system that we've got, so that not one individual party can gain a majority if it stands in both the constituency and the list. That's why you want two parties that are not quite in cahoots with each other, but heading in that direction, where they've got a common cause, and the common denominator is Scottish independence. Whether you were an SNP supporter or voter or you've come to Alba, what greater concept can there be that after the election you've got the two biggest parties at Holyrood, led by Nicola Sturgeon as First Minister and Alex Salmond as former First Minister? What a signal that sends out to Scotland, to Boris and to the rest of the world, that Scotland is actually united with a common goal, were the two best tacticians that they've seen in modern Scottish electoral history.
I agree. That would just be, and as you say, that the important thing is to send the message not just to Westminster, but you're right, to the world, because the world's used to party coalition. The rest of the Western world, invariably, with exception probably the UK and the US, operate on coalition governments. You know, Germany, the most successful economy in the world, probably, and nation, they operate in coalitions all the time. It's the way to do it. And it balances things too. No one can get too extreme, because there's always an option. And we should always have options.
You know, if you look at the statistics, obviously there's 73 constituencies. There's 56 regional MSPs. So that's a total of 129. Mm-hmm. So perhaps the ideal outcome is the constituencies are all won by the SNP. So there's your 73. And in the regions, well, we'll be putting up 32 candidates. If we've got maybe 20, 25, something like that, there's your supermajority, a total approaching 100 out of 129. You get rid of a lot of the unionists off the lists, and you have a resounding voice very much in favour of independence.
Well, it changes the whole narrative. Scotland is not beholden to Westminster. Westminster has lost all control over the constitutional question. They're out of the scenario. That's just a fact. And this, anyone using talk of gaming the system should be ashamed of themselves. It's just a ridiculous thing to say. We're not. It's a democratic vote, and if people choose to vote that way, the unionists set this up. This wasn't set up by the Alba Party. This was set up by the unionists. We're just playing their game and using their tactics.
And they don't like it.
No, they don't.
Unfortunately,
some of the SNP don't like it either.
We're intending to do it deliberately. It's a lawful election. You'll have two ballot papers. You put your cross exactly where you want to put it, and cannot be criticised for participating in a manner that's transparent, open, democratic and entirely legal. Nothing gaming about it. They just don't like when the wool's been pulled over our eyes for so long that we pull it away and they try to put it back again.
I mean, what should be a big tip for a clue to all the people in Scotland is that never since 1999 does the South, does England show much interest in the Scottish local elections, they call it. They're not interested in that. They don't pay any attention. From Friday last week, they're paying attention, folks. They know. They can see the writing on the wall that this is danger to the union. Prior to Friday, the union was not in danger. It's now in mortal danger. And you have it in your hands with your two votes, and to use them wisely. And suddenly we can recreate those days of 2014 and go on the march again towards independence.
But that's the great thing about this. You'll have seen that EFI and ISP both stood down their candidates because what they want to do is to promote that sense of unity that we had in the Yes campaign. You know, Roddy, I was in George Square on the 17th of September 2014 and the atmosphere was electric.
I was there myself.
Oh, yeah.
I was the guy with the salt tire.
So was I. Bouncing, we were full of hope and optimism and we really thought we were going to do it. That's the days that we need to bring back again, and we are bringing them back because the hope and the enthusiasm and the sheer joy that there has been expressed since last Friday's announcement, it's only increasing on a daily basis. And as our enthusiasm in Alba and in Scotland increases, so does the level of fear amongst the unionists and at Westminster. They can see it coming, we can see it coming, but we don't need a false dawn. What we need is a very direct, clear message. SNP 1, ALBA 2, Scotland scores.
Yes, both votes yes. That's what we're looking for. And it's all about Scotland. This is not about personalities. It's not about parties. We've got to stop the tribalism and the vested interests, because this is Scotland's chance and we mustn't squander this chance. This is, we've, you know, I feel we've dropped the ball a few times since 2014 when we could have made a move. This, we should not, I go back to what I said right at the beginning here, Eva, was that the internal market bill is, you know, is a danger to Scotland and its democracy. They won't close Holyrood, in my opinion, but they'll try and neuter it. But they would think twice about neutering it if there's 80, 90 pro-independence MSPs sitting in there.
Well, I think the other problems are these issues to do with, for example, the 3,000 civil servants who are going to be based north of the border but who are answerable to Westminster, or talk of devolving power and money out of Holyrood and into the hands of the local authorities. These are all things that are done to tie the hand of Holyrood and to tie the hand of the democratically elected parliament. And these are things that are coming further down the line but will be very, very difficult to impose if we've got that supermajority of, you know, powerful and capable politicians who can argue back against all of those changes. Mm-hmm. Because that's what Scotland needs, a strong government.
And we've seen what the British civil servants can do recently and how incompetent they are. And the havoc that they caused. Do you want another 3,000 of them, Scotland? I think not. Let's all unite in common cause. That's what it's all about.
Although I have to say, I'm quite happy about Boris's announcement that the Union flag is going to have to be flown in all government buildings, because I think that will have entirely the opposite effect to the one that he wanted it to have.
They don't get it. They just don't get it. I'm of the opinion that, see, I don't. You know, I've got respect for Alec. I think he's, you know, a colossus. And he's a motivator and a unifier. And I think it's great for the ALBA party. But I think the unionists and a lot of people on our side overplay the Nicola Alec thing. Because, you know, down in England where they've done it, they've from, going back to Neil Kinnock and Gordon Brown and Miliband and Corbyn, the right-wing media have destroyed and demonised and kept the Tories in power. And they've tried the same tactic up here. They don't get it. You know, the SNP and ALBA are just part of the Yes movement. You don't kill the movement by removing one leader or demonising another leader. We'll just find another one. That's as simple as that. We lost Alec, we found Nicola. If we lost Nicola, we would find someone else. If we lose Alec again, we'll find someone else. The movement is greater than any part, and we have to utilise that.
But I think that that's something that the people of ALBA particularly understand, and it's difficult for those who are still in the SNP to grasp that ALBA's not in the game to criticise either Nicola or the SNP.
No.
They're in the game to get independence as quickly as we can. It isn't about, as you say, personalities or point scoring. It's about getting to the destination that we share as a common goal. And our view is, in ALBA, that if we can share the burden, that's what we should do. So, you know, again, SNP 1, ALBA 2. And the movement will be there when the personalities are gone. But I would much rather there was no need for a movement towards independence beyond the next year or two, because that's when we need to attain it. Time is not on our side.
No, it's getting, every day it's getting worse. And when Brexit starts really biting in, it's going to be horrific. And the sooner we can get our hands on the levers of power and our own economy and work policies that will work for the Scottish economy, the better. And every day we leave it in the hands of Westminster, we're endangering our economy and the future of our children and grandchildren. That's just the reality. We have to make this move now, and the only way to do that, folks, SNP 1, ALBA 2. We're going to keep saying that between now and May. You've got to keep hearing that, and you've got to tell everyone as well.
But look at that mess that we had with the shellfish, and that, you know, our guys from the west of Scotland and the Hebrides and what have you, doing their best trying to export the seafood and shellfish to the continent and having cargoes ruined, lorry loads ruined, stuff having to get dumped, all because arrangements for Brexit were so shabby and shoddy. You know, people's livelihoods and lives on the line. And Boris cared not a jot. That's not what would have happened had Powers been in Scotland and had been able to remain within the EU. So goodness only knows what the future holds in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I would say to anyone just now, if we were an independent country today and you looked across the border and you saw the Tories and we were voting on May the 5th to join into a union with the British, with the English, into a British union, would you vote yes for that? You'd run a mile. It would be a 99%. No thanks, you're all right. I don't even think a lot of the present day unions would agree to it.
Not at all.
So we've got to move quickly. As you say, time is the enemy, Eva. We don't have a lot of time left, and we've got to get the message out. How would you, apart from, you know, doing things like this and putting, you know, the usual stuff, how do we get the message out there, a positive message to the people?
Well, I think it's different from 2014, Roddy, because then I think people thought we had a bit of a luxury. We had plenty of time to think about things. We had quite a long campaign and quite a long run-in to the decisions that had to be made on the day. We don't have that luxury now for various reasons. We know that the debt that Westminster has accumulated now is astronomical and probably increasing exponentially. We know that once we're out of the pandemic, if not before, then there's going to be a major clampdown in relation to taxes. And if we thought we'd seen austerity a few years ago, by God, we don't know what we've got coming next after this. So instead of independence becoming desirable, if you like, I think independence is absolutely necessary and vital for the Scottish economy and for the Scottish people. We can't hang about. We're going to get top-down cuts from Westminster. We're going to find that our budget is constrained more and more. We'll be getting pelters in relation to what we should be doing with that limited budget. We're going to have Labour and Tory tell us, and when I say us, I mean SNP oblique ALBA, they'll be telling us that we're not spending enough in the health service and we're not giving staff high enough rises. We're not spending enough in schools. We should be building more schools and houses and roads and a whole load of stuff that we're not going to be able to do if our budget is restricted, which it will be. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if they lock us up and then they poke fun at us because we can't break out, mm-hmm. You know?
During the bank crash, and it was probably the worst recession any of us have lived in, the British economy shrank by 2%, and we know the devastation that that brought. They figure with Brexit, it could be as high as 8%, four times as a bigger hit as we had in the 2008 crash with the banks. And we were just coming out of that crash, slowly but surely. We hadn't even got back to 2008 levels when COVID hit, never mind Brexit. So devastation is around the corner.
That's misery and redundancies. It's increased poverty. It's depression. It's homelessness. It's folk turning to despair, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And that will be across the board in all walks of life. There'll be folk that until now thought they were fairly comfortable that are going to get a hammer blow. There'll be others that have been struggling for years that dip below the poverty level and don't get back up out of it. And the Scottish Government, if it remains only a devolved assembly, is not going to have the wherewithal, not going to have the ability to raise the money to bring people back up out of that pit of despair. Mm-hmm. That's only going to be able to done if to be done if, as you've said already, we've got the levers of power, the economic levers, and the ability to make decisions across the board in every area and every aspect of government, not just those areas that Westminster thinks that we're maybe just big enough to be able to look after, but we're not getting the whole suite of powers. It's a wee bit like Scotland's beginning to come of age, you know, 21 again. Maybe just about time for the young man, the young woman to consider leaving home and getting short of the apron strings and getting out there into the real world.
Mm-hmm. We can't afford to at the moment to say, oh, well, I've always voted. I'm just going to do that 1-2 with the SNP because I want to be sure. I don't want to split the vote. You've got to, don't take my word for it. Don't take Eva's word for it. Go and do your own research, look at it. And when you do, you'll see it's just simple arithmetic. And the bottom line is, the more constituency seats you win, the less likelihood you are of winning any in the regional list. And with the SNP over anywhere between 52 and 58% on the constituency, the likelihood of any list seats for the SNP is not going to happen. The ALBA party is where you want to be putting your votes.
Well, I've said to you already, I'm SNP 1, ALBA 2. But I had a wry laugh to myself the other day when Alex Salmond was being interviewed. And I think what he said was, look, if I, of all people, can vote SNP 1, which I will be doing, and ALBA 2, then that's what I expect everybody else to do for the sake of Scotland. Mm-hmm. So really, if Alex Salmond, everything that we know about, can hold his nose and vote for SNP 1, so should everybody else who wants independence for Scotland. Because that's the right thing.
Absolutely. Scotland should always be our priority, folks. And I know most of the listeners here, that's exactly what it is. But I would just ask you to think carefully between now and May the 6th. Listen to what you're hearing. Do your own research, though. Watch the polls. But SNP 1, ALBA 2 is supermajority. And we control Westminster, not Westminster controlling us. The power's back with us. We had the chances, I think it was Jim Sullivan that said it, between 7:30 and 10:30 on the 18th of September 2014, the Scottish people held there, for the first time ever, their future in their own hands. They made a mistake, in my opinion, that day when they handed it back. And we handed it back to these charlatans, these Tories. And look what's happened since. Don't make the same mistake again. You have got the power in your hands on May the 6th to SNP 1, ALBA 2. Eva, we're just about finished, my friend. It's been absolutely joyous speaking to you. And what's your sort of plan over the next few days? Have they got you scooting, hooting and tooting all over the joint?
Well, I'm glad that we're doing these things virtually, because I can almost sit in the comfort of my own home and as you know, be interviewed worldwide. Meetings tonight, meetings tomorrow, candidates all get together tomorrow with policy meetings next week, with a women's conference next week that's open to the public. I'm really looking forward to that, because the women's vote is obviously something very dear to my own heart, and it's something that I'm absolutely certain ALBA's going to be able to maximise and mobilise, because the amount of support that we've had from women in the last week or so has been phenomenal, beyond my wildest dreams. A lot to do, but certainly the reward is beyond description. Its value is beyond belief.
Indeed. That's
the whole goal. Self-determination.
Well, when you become an MSP, I hope you don't forget us all, and you'll come back and tell us how you're getting on and give us some insight here on the Prism Show, because we'll not be going away either, not until Scotland gains its rightful place among the nations of the world. So I'd like to thank you, Eva. I know you're a very busy lady and it's all go, go, go. So to create this time was much appreciated. I told you we'd go in quick and it would be painless, didn't I? I told you it'd be painless.
You were almost spot on.
And so to you, my listeners, I hope you enjoyed my wee chat with Eva as much as I did. And until I speak to you all again, you know what to do. Take care now.
Through a Scottish Prism, the programme that is unapologetically pro-Scottish independence and anti-Westminster rule. Everything we say here is viewed through a Scottish Prism. Brought to you by Barhead Boy.